Welcome to Citizens Climate University, a weekly webinar program of the Citizens Climate Lobby that provides CCL supporters with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. My name is Jamie DeMarco. I am your host tonight, and the topic is how to publish climate-focused opinion editorials. Thanks very much for joining us. So our topic tonight, like I said, is how write opinion editorials, and our host is Steve Volk. Steve Volk, fun fact, besides Mark Reynolds, Steve Volk was the first full-time employee hire of the Citizens Climate Education. But even before he joined the Citizens Climate Education staff in 2009, his career included 30 years with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and serving as media consultant for the citizen-driven anti-global poverty organization and Results. At CCE, he trains and supports volunteers as they publish letters, articles, and op-eds in local newspapers and develop relationships with their members of Congress. Steve writes the media material distributed to CCL volunteers and directs. Main points you're going to take away with tonight are one, understanding the writing process and tips for drafting your own climate change-focused op-ed. Two, recommendations for how to submit your op-ed as well as sharing it when published. And three, providing examples of what effective op-eds look like. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
Great. All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Great to have you here. And before I get started, I want to put in a little plug for the Print Media Action Team on community. So it's a wonderful little team. Each week we have suggestions for letter to the editor opportunities, and we're going to start doing some more coaching and forum stuff in terms of editorials and op-eds and things like that. So if print media is your thing, go to CCL community, go to the print media team and join us. So again, so just kind of going over the agenda one more time really quickly here. We're going to, as Jamie was saying, we're going to go through the writing process, how to submit your op-ed, and most importantly, sharing your success. And then we're going to look at a few ideas and examples of op-eds, and we'll open it up for questions after that. So let's get into the process now. So if we can go to the next slide here. Yeah. So topic and approach. Essentially, this is what you will write about and how you will write about it. So op-eds have to relate to something that's in the news or something that should be in the news. So the topic can relate to a recent report, a disaster that's connected to climate change, an annual event like the State of the Union or Earth Day. And the approach that you can take can be several different forms. You can have a straightforward presentation of facts. You can have a personal story, or you can do a first-person narrative. But the main thing is that when it comes to an op-ed, a newspaper editor is always going to ask, why should we be running this? And the other thing is, how does this piece relate to what's going on in our community? So let's go to the next slide here. And so the first thing I recommend that you do is create an outline for your op-ed. So once you've decided what you're going to write about, and the outline can be like about six or seven items. It takes you from your opening to your conclusions. And when you get stuck, you can go back to your outline and see, okay, what's next? And that'll kind of, get you back in gear here. So your outline also becomes a shopping list for the research that you need to do for your piece. You want to have your piece be informative. You don't want it to be dry, but you also want to, make sure that you're backing up, what you're saying with accurate information. So do the research before you start. And once you've figured out your topic, read as many articles about it as you can. I mean, like until the information is coming out of your pores. This will make the writing process much easier. The words are going to spill out of your head, because nothing stymies the writing process like having to stop and look for information to back up your case. And to lend more credibility to your piece, you also want to cite your sources for your facts. So let's move on to the next slide here. You want to be compelling right from the start. You know, you have maybe one or two sentences to grab the reader's attention. So you have to say something provocative, engaging, and informative right at the very beginning. You know, something that makes the reader say, okay, you have my attention, tell me more. So don't pussyfoot around or back into things with historical background. The reader needs to immediately know what is your point, or they'll move on to the next article. So moving on to the next slide here. Now, what you also want to do with your op-ed is create a natural flow. And a good way to do this is to anticipate the questions that readers might have and then answer those questions. So often those answers will raise more questions that you should answer. So what you're doing with your piece is you're anticipating and answering the questions that the reader has. And this will create a natural and logical flow to your piece. And a good technique for this is to actually pose a question and then answer it. You know, like, for example, you know, how can we tax carbon without it being an economic burden on American families? And I think everybody knows the answer to that question. So moving on, the other important thing is the local angle. Your local newspaper that doesn't care about the fate of polar bears in the Arctic, but if you can relate climate change to what's happening in your state and community, the editors are more likely to accept your piece. So, you know, for instance, you know, what is the impact that climate change is having in your area and will have in the future? You know, what are some of the opportunities that might exist in your area as we transition to a cleaner energy and to cleaner energy and greater efficiency? So very, very important to talk about the local impact and the local opportunity that there is in this transition away from fossil fuels. So moving on, you want to stay focused. Don't try to say that, you know, there's this big temptation. Oh, I've got 700 words. I'm going to say everything I always wanted to say about climate change and carbon pricing. But you really don't want to do that. You want to stay focused and try to just get one or two points across and then take the time to explain them thoroughly. So a call to action in publishing an op-ed, you've been given the biggest megaphone in your community. So you want to use it to issue a call to action in your piece, like telling people to contact their congressperson to support a revenue neutral carbon tax. And now we actually have a bill that we can refer people to. So you want to stay focused. You want to have a call to action in your piece. So moving on to the next one here. You want to have a strong conclusion. You want to finish strong. The things you need to do at the end of your piece is to repeat the main point, circle back to the beginning. That's usually a good device. And the end of your piece, you know, you want to kind of finish up with a little bit of a rhetorical flourish, you know, maybe some kind of a play on words or something like that. You know, you want to you want to have sort of that ta-da effect at the end of your piece, you know, that, you know, people feel like, you know, they've really reached a conclusion. There's nothing worse than, you know, reading a piece that just sort of trails off and doesn't feel like there's any closure to it. So you want to have a strong conclusion. So a good way to find out, you know, how, you know, to measure the quality of your piece is, can you write a headline for it? So if you can't sum up what your piece says in 8 words or so, you've got a problem. There's a problem with clarity. So you might want to consider a rewrite at that point. But, you know, definitely clarity is an issue with op-eds. You know, you don't want the reader, you know, kind of scratching their heads and saying, what is this all about? And one of the ways to tell whether or not you're being clear is, you know, can you write a headline on this? And when you submit your op-ed, you also want to include a suggested headline, because more often than not, they're going to use that headline. And so this reduces the risk of a bad headline being written. And the, you know, the headline is essentially the entry point to your piece, and you don't want a botched introduction. So, you know, make sure you can write a headline and then include that suggested headline with the piece when you submit it. So then how do I submit an op-ed? So what you'll want to do is go to the newspaper's opinion page and see if there are instructions for submitting an op-ed. And be sure to adhere to the newspaper's word limit. If they say 600 words, don't give them 800 words. You know, give them what they want. You want to when you submit the op-ed, you'll want to introduce yourself briefly and make a short pitch about why they should be publishing your piece. So that would be like just a short note at the top of your email when you submit the op-ed to, as I said, you know, just introduce yourself and really kind of make the pitch of, okay, this is a great op-ed, and here's why you should be publishing. You don't need to go on and on, you know, just a few sentences, but you do want to, you know, kind of make a pitch at the top there. Now, if there are no instructions for submitting an op-ed, just find out who the opinion page editor is and send it to the editor. And if you want to submit to multiple papers, make sure that they don't have a policy preventing your op-ed from being published in other newspapers. Some newspapers like to have exclusivity on op-eds. Just make sure, if that's the case with your newspaper, that you're not peddling it around to other newspapers. So moving on, the next thing that you'll want to do is to share your success if you get published. So first thing you want to do is, you know, send a thank you email to the opinion editor for publishing the op-ed, and then ask your group leader or whoever is designated to do it to submit a field report for this publication. We track all of these, you know, our letters to the editor, our op-eds, and all that. So make sure somebody in your group is sending in a field report about it. And then, you know, share the op-ed with your chapter. You know, everybody in your chapter will be thrilled, you know, to see that you've gotten something published. And share it on social media too. And when you share it on social media, you can have people in your group, share. You can post it on Facebook, for instance, and have the members of your group share it. And what's really neat is if you share it on Twitter. So if you happen to be on Twitter, or you have somebody in your group who does social media and they're on Twitter, have them post a tweet about the op-ed with the link to the op-ed, and then also tag your members of Congress, like your senators, your representative, and so forth. And so if you do that, then the people in the congressional offices that are tracking social media for their bosses, if they're tagged in a tweet, they will see it, and that will also, you know, increase the odds that your members of Congress will, you know, see your op-ed. But we don't want to leave anything, you know, up to chance. So the other thing that you want to do in terms of sharing your op-ed is to send a copy of it to the person in your group who is the liaison for, you may have liaisons for your senators, and somebody else is a liaison for your representative. Make sure that all the liaisons get a copy of it so that they can then forward your op-ed to the staffers that they communicate with in those congressional offices. Okay, so let's take a look at some different ideas and examples for writing an op-ed. So we're going to look at a few things. You know, one will be the extended metaphor. Another one will be the personal story or narrative. And the other will be a local angle, and then finally we'll take a look at annual events like State of the Union, Earth Day, that kind of stuff. So the first example I want to take a look at here is what I call the extended metaphor, and of course, you know, metaphor is a figure of speech that compares one thing to another. And so we sent out an op-ed for Mark, and the headline on it was Last Call at Club Fossil Fuel. And the metaphor for this was that, let's see if we can go to the next slide. Yeah, you might be able to see the text there. So the metaphor that we were working with here is that, you know, fossil fuels are, you know, kind of like alcohol. They're addictive. We kind of get used to it. And so the idea is that, you know, there's this bar that's very popular that people go to, and it's called Club Fossil Fuel. And it's hard for us, you know, to kind of break away from that. So we had that, we used that metaphor throughout this particular, you know, piece here. I'll just kind of read a couple of the things here about that. You know, here in North Florida, the bar tab at Club Fossil Fuel will be in the millions, and that is just a start. Never heard of Club Fossil Fuel? It's the most popular franchise on the planet, everyone's favorite watering hole for well over a century, because the addictive libations, coal, oil, and gas, are relatively cheap. Cheap, that is, until you factor in the hidden costs, like asthma and other respiratory diseases, air pollution, or military costs to secure our supplies of oil from the Middle East. So you kind of get the idea. And we sort of run with that metaphor throughout the piece. And that, so just kind of skipping down to the bottom here in the conclusion to the piece, it says, last fall, the International Energy Agency warned that we have only 5 years before global warming becomes irreversible. Given what's at stake, it's time for Last Call at Club Fossil Fuel. So that's an example of, you know, the rhetorical device of an extended metaphor. If we move on to the next example here, that would be the personal story or narrative. The personal stories are, you know, very powerful. I mean, facts and figures are good for making a case, but if you really want to make a connection with readers, nothing beats a personal story. And that's what we did with this op-ed. that ran in five newspapers, all of them in coal country, about a former coal miner now working for a solar energy company. So the headline on it was, transition to clean energy can include a future for coal miners today. So let's just go ahead to the next slide here, and you can see the text for that. I'll read a little bit of this. It's hard to take the mile-high view on climate change when you're toiling away underground to put food on the table and a roof over your family's head. That's certainly the case for coal miners, whose concerns about meeting the needs of their kids here and now trump whatever concerns exist about the world those kids will inherit 30 years later. When you spend your days 600 feet below the surface, where temperatures range between 55 and 60 degrees year-round, you might not notice that the biosphere above you is slowly roasting. So then we go on to introduce a young man who, let's see, where is his name is Matt Rauscher. His father worked in a coal mine. His grandfather worked in a coal mine. I think he's in southern Indiana or southern Illinois. Coulterville, Illinois. And he got laid off from a coal mine. So he went looking around for a job, and he managed to find one doing solar installations. So this was a great piece about, that kind of pushes back gently on the narrative of, if we get rid of coal, what are all these people going to do to put food on the table? So this was a very good piece, but it was also a very respectful piece. Just kind of acknowledged coal miners and the job that they do and that sort of thing. But it was one of those pieces that told a personal story, and I think it was one of those pieces that people could really kind of latch on to. And when we sent it to various newspapers, I mean, it ran in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I think it ran in the Pittsburgh Gazette. It ran in five newspapers in coal country. And the reason those papers picked up this piece was because there was a compelling personal story that was involved with this. So let's move on to the next example, and that would be the local angle. As I was mentioning, the more you can connect the issue to how it affects your city and state, the more relevant it will be for readers. So this particular piece, this was written by Brian Etling, and the headline on it was, shrinking Crater Lake snowpack argues for carbon tax. So if we can go to the text on that. So Brian opened up his op-ed, saying, well, almost 2,000 feet deep, Crater Lake is the deepest lake in the United States. It is located in Oregon's only national park. Fed by overhead snow and rain, this lake is one of the cleanest and purest in the world. So he goes on to talk a little bit about Crater Lake in Oregon, and he knows all about it because he's a national park ranger. He was a national park ranger who spent his summers there, and so he talked quite a bit about how drought and diminishing snowpack is affecting the lake, and it's also affecting the runoff that supplies the water and everything. So this is a very strong local angle here, because Crater Lake is probably one of the most iconic landmarks in the state. And this particular piece, I think, was picked up in at least a half a dozen newspapers in Oregon. So this was really popular. But again, it was very strong with the local angle and talking about Crater Lake and the effect that climate change is having. And of course, he also, got in, at the end of his piece, he got in a pitch for carbon fee and dividend. So I'll read the last paragraph that he has here. The best way to limit future droughts threatening our farms, cattle ranches, salmon fisheries, and drinking water supply is to take action on climate change. That action, a national fee on carbon with revenue returned to households, will only happen if Oregon citizens tell our members of Congress, such as Representative Greg Walden and U.S. Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, to make it so. So that's an example of the local angle type of approach for writing an op-ed. So another approach would be the annual event. And so there are things that kind of come up on the calendar every year that shouldn't take anybody by surprise. New Year's, Christmas, the State of the Union address, Earth Day. Usually there's a big climate conference that happens in December with the UN. So these are things that happen throughout the year that you know are coming up. And so they also provide an opening to draft and submit an op-ed. So let's take a look at the text for the example that we have here. Carbon tax offers hope for reducing pollution. So this is a piece from Mark that was sent out for Earth Day. And so what he did with this piece is he kind of opened up with, and I said usually you don't want to back into a piece with historical background and stuff like that. But in this particular instance, if you're tying something into Earth Day, you want to provide the context for the piece. So it opens up, when 20 million Americans participated in the first Earth Day on April 22nd, 1970, the movement to clean up our air and water and to prevent our world from becoming one big garbage dump was born. Before the year was out, Congress passed and President Nixon signed the Clean Air Act, establishing the Environmental Protection Agency as the guardian of all that we breathe and eventually the water we drink. So gives a little bit of background about Earth Day and how that was connected to starting the EPA. And then from there, we talked about, okay, well, back then it was all about cleaning up our air and our water. Now we have a problem with climate change. So what are we going to do about it? And then, of course, what the op-ed suggests is that we need to put a fee on carbon and return the revenue to households. So if I can kind of skip down to the bottom. Again, when you're concluding your piece, you want to kind of circle back a little bit to the beginning, so that's what was done here at the end of this piece in the last paragraph. It said the original Earth Day crystallized a movement that brought us the agency charged with protecting the purity of our air and water. Rather than attacking the EPA for trying to do what Congress has failed to do, our lawmakers can rise to the challenge and enact a national tax on carbon that gives revenue back to the people.
Thank you so much, Steve. This has been really informative. I really appreciated it. If you want to email Steve Volk, there's his email on the screen. It's just steve@citizensclimate.org. And you can also ask questions on the CCL forums. And thank you very much for being on the call tonight, everyone. We hope that you found tonight's webinar engaging, useful, and empowering in your advocacy efforts.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks, everyone.